Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with me now is Ellie Mistal, the legal editor of Radiolab's new podcast about the Supreme Court called More Perfect. He wrote a piece on AboveTheLaw.com this week, horrified at something that John McCain said on the campaign trail about keeping the Senate in Republican hands. Here it is.
I promise you that we will be united against any Supreme Court nominee that that Hillary Clinton, if she were president, would put up. And I promise you, this is why we need the majority.
Ellie Mistal joins me now. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on Pledge Week.
That is quite a statement. United against any nominee that President Hillary Clinton might put up. I don't think I've ever heard that blanketed denial of presidential appointment prerogatives before.
It's entirely consistent with what they've been doing, right? I think it's important for people to understand that currently the Merrick Garland nomination has crossed over the line into entirely unprecedented territory. Two law professors did a study, and they found that in 103 other cases where an elected president nominated a person, nothing like this has ever happened. So my issue is that if we understand that right now the Republicans are doing something that's never, ever happened before, why do we think they're going to stop that just because Hillary Clinton wins? To be nice? I mean, that's not reason.
Now, you call this in your article a constitutional crisis, but McCain did later walk that statement back and say he would look at an individual's qualifications. Does that make this less a constitutional crisis and just a one-day campaign story?
Not really, because, again, if McCain was true to his statement that he would look at everybody's individual qualifications and give them a vote, well, that's exactly what he's not doing right now. What the Republicans are doing, they're really exploiting a bit of a constitutional loophole here, right? People have to understand that the Supreme Court, their constitutional powers, it's the Constitution is very quiet about what the Supreme Court actually can do or must do, right? We say that we have to have one. We don't say how many justices have to be on the Supreme Court. We don't say that the Senate has to give the presidential nominee a up or down vote on a Supreme Court justice. So Congress has kind of wide latitude here to do what they're doing. They haven't ever done this before out of convention, out of, as I put in my article, a gentleman's agreement to not be completely obstructionist. Now that they're willing to go against that, what's to ever stop them? What's to ever make them confirm another Supreme Court justice?
And I thought that was a great line in your article, that by a gentleman's agreement, we let nine people who have no army and no constituents decide matters of legal dispute. Are you questioning at all whether they should have that much power?
Whether the Supreme Court should have that much power? I mean, look, part of what's going on here, and again, why I think the Republicans aren't inclined to nominate anybody, is that movement conservatives, not just the regular GOP, the actual movement intellectual conservatives, have for a long time been annoyed with how much the Supreme Court does. One of the things that we see with this current Supreme Court term is that it's very scaled back. Only having eight justices means that the Supreme Court can't do a lot of the stuff that it normally does. Conservatives like that. That's one of the things they've been arguing for, right? So in a very important way, the conservatives are kind of getting their wish by hobbling the court in this way.
Wouldn't they prefer a fifth vote to pursue activist legal decisions on their side, like throwing out colleges' diversity programs and enacting Citizens United and canceling the Voting Rights Act, just to take some recent examples?
I mean, look, if they could reanimate the dead body of Justice Scalia, they would absolutely confirm him today, okay? Like, obviously, they want the Supreme Court to do what they want the Supreme Court to do. So, yes, I think that if there was an opportunity to get a fifth vote on their side, fine. But if it's just going to be 4-4, another thing that we have seen during this last term, remember, when the Supreme Court ties, the decision goes back to the circuit courts. So what you have is a bunch of different circuits with a bunch of different federal laws based on their region. Again, from a movement conservative perspective, that's not a bad thing. They're kind of totally okay with Texas having a different federal law than California. So again, by hobbling it in this way, there are some intellectual conservative goals that are being achieved. The question is whether or not they should be allowed to basically attack the third branch of government.
That's probably something that most of our listeners have never thought about. A tie goes to the circuit courts, the lower federal courts, which are spread around the different parts of the country. So that really does mean that California, as you say, or New York, could be governed by one set of federal laws and Texas by another.
Yes.
Is that a bad thing?
I mean, look, I'll have to show my bias here, right? Because I find that horrifying. I find it horrifying that it could be a situation where whether or not you can buy a cake depends on what region of the country you happen to be in when you're having your wedding, right? Like that doesn't seem fair to me. And one of the few things that the Supreme Court is supposed to do is to resolve differences between the circuit courts. They can't do that right now because they have an even number of justices.
You criticize in your piece Chief Justice John Roberts for his silence on all this, rather than telling the Republicans, no, don't do this, you're hurting the court. Aren't Supreme Court justices supposed to stay out of politics?
The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is supposed to protect the institution of the court. That is his fundamental job. And I think in a lot of ways, Roberts has been a force for good on that. There is something good about Roberts trying to find consensuses. There's something good about Roberts kind of trying to figure out the broadest based way to uphold federal law. But, you know, it's kind of like a Hall of Fame debate. There are players who are really good but aren't quite that level of a Hall of Fame player. I think what Roberts has done to himself is taken himself out of the discussion of one of our greatest jurists of all times. Because right now, in this moment, when Scalia died, if Roberts had came out across partisan lines and said, look, the proper functioning of this body is more important than any partisan politics, I think that would have been a great moment for him. Instead, he's shrunk from this moment. He has scaled back. He's tried to say, like, oh, this is all okay. What is he going to say if, you know, play the chess game out a little bit here? We have two justices that are over 80, one that's 79. If the Republicans don't confirm if they're united, as McCain suggested, against the Hillary Clinton nominee, what happens if another justice dies? Now we're down to 7 people. It's at what point do we have to say that the court can't work right?
Ellie Mustal with us, legal editor of Radiolab's new podcast about the Supreme Court called More Perfect. And Frank in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Ellie Mustal. Hi, Frank.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Okay.
Hey.
My question is, if the Republicans are adamant that they're going to do this blockade, isn't the answer for President Obama to simply make a recess appointment of Judge Garland to the Supreme Court in December once the Senate recesses and ends its term? The president constitutionally has the power when the Senate is not in session to make a recess appointment to the Supreme Court.
Without confirmation by the Senate. Is that true even in the case of the Supreme Court?
Yeah, it would be true, but there was actually a fairly big Supreme Court case about this a little while ago. The Senate gets to decide whether or not it's in recess. And previously, Obama tried to say that the Senates were holding these like sham sessions to keep Obama from being able to make recess appointments. Obama made some recess appointments anyway, and the Supreme Court eventually ruled that it was the Senate's call to decide whether or not they were in recess, not the executive branch. So, yes, Obama technically has that power, but the Senates can convene these sham sessions and effectively never go into recess, thus never allowing Obama to make a recess appointment.
So they could be home campaigning in their districts, eating their Christmas goose, whatever, and technically be in session.
Yeah. One of my colleagues on Above the Law, Joe Patrice, has a funny way of thinking about this. You could imagine a scenario where Obama makes a recess appointment for Merrick Garland, and then the Republicans sue saying that that was not a recess. And then Merrick Garland is actually sitting on the court having to decide whether or not his own appointment was.
Oh, he'd have to recuse himself in that case.
Again, as I try to say, there is a constitutional crisis happening in plain sight. And it's hard to get people to understand and to care about just how, again, unprecedented this situation is.
Celeste in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Celeste.
Hi, how are you? I'm a longtime listener. I love your show.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that it occurs to me that perhaps this is the reason why portions of the electorate are so upset, is because Congress is not doing its job on so many levels, and actively blocking Merrick Garland for so long, your guest said, you know, a historically long period,
Right. Right. Well,
so the question is really, who should we be mad at, right? So here's an interesting thing, Celeste. Chuck Grassley is the Republican chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, right? He is in charge as much as anybody of obstructing this nomination. Chuck Grassley is up for re-election in Iowa this year, and he's going to win. He's going to win big. Even in this, even if there's a landslide against Trump, Chuck Grassley is going to keep his job, okay? And so one of my issues is that, yes, there are lots of people who are angry about this, but if the voters aren't willing to exact, and I'll say it this way, political retribution against obstructing senators, then their lesson is that this doesn't cost them anything. And for people who think that, oh, the Democrats would do this too, first of all, I would say there's no historical precedent for the Democrats doing this. But if you want there to be, certainly if Republicans are not going to be punished at the polls when it flips, and at some point in this country, it will flip, and we will have a Republican president and a democratically controlled Senate. All we're telling the Democrats right now is do this. Do this because nobody cares.
Last question, and it's a political question. Even though you're a legal analyst, there is a scenario that's been floated, which is if Hillary Clinton wins the election, the Republicans will realize that Merrick Garland is the most moderate Supreme Court nominee that they're probably going to get, and they're going to confirm him before she takes office. You think that's likely?
Until McCain opened his mouth, that was my bet. That was where I would have bet. Now, I think we have to consider the possibility that if the Republicans keep control of the Senate, this is never going to happen.
John McCain on the campaign trail this week, saying Republicans will unite and not confirm any Supreme Court nominee that Hillary Clinton as president might put forward. We've been getting the reaction of Ellie Mistal. One of the best reasons to listen to Radiolab's new Supreme Court podcast called More Perfect. He is the legal editor of More Perfect. Ellie, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.